Hump Day. Tigers, Cajuns, Saints back on the practice field. It's the last day of camp for the Saints tomorrow. They'll break camp and get ready for the regular season. Teams are game planning now, and we'll meet a performance coach who might just be the story behind the emergence of Drew Holiday as one of the premier players in the league. That and Michael Hugonen stops by today, Wednesday, August 21st, 2019.
Here's the 1-2 to Conforto. Swing and a drive deep to right field. Puig's going to just watch it go. And it is gone right to the front of the Shea Bridge. A two-run homer for Michael Conforto, number 27 on the year. The Mets are leading by a score of 4-2. And did he ever launch that one?
Kura has his sign, and here comes the 3-2. The runners go, swinging a fly ball to left field. Here comes the left fielder, and that ball's going to drop. Three runs are going to score. Bader scores all the way from first base without a play. On a double by Fowler, a bloop double. And three runs batted in. The Cardinals now lead.
The 1-1 pitch is hit to first and off the glove of Pujols into right field. DeShields around third. Calhoun up with it. His throw is late. Delino scores standing up. And the Rangers walk it off for a second consecutive night against the Angels. They win it tonight 3-2 in 11.
Afternoon. How are you? Acadiana and around the world, thanks for dialing us up. The Jordy Helfer Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, a myriad of ways to find us. We're just glad you did. My main man, CD, back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 1037 The Game. CD, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Jordy. How about you?
I'm sure he's good. Okay. I'm sure he's good. I'm doing well. You had this. You played three clips there of some baseball highlights. The first clip, the Mets. Boy, the announcer, so enthusiastic, so fired up. Then the second announcer, that's a base hit. It's a bloop double, and three runs are going to score. And then you get the walk-off with the Rangers over the Angels. So those play-by-play guys, that makes a whole lot of difference in the world. Also making a whole lot of difference in the world. I watched Hard Knocks of the Raiders last night. I think they're going to be sneaky good. I really do. And, look, I'm convinced more so than ever before, Antonio Brown just doesn't want to practice. He just wants to show up on game day and practice. And Frank Caliendo is arguably one of the greatest impersonators in the world. He did a Gruden last night. He did Charles Barkley. He did John Madden. He's just really, really good and really funny. And kudos to HBO. Job well done. I'm interested to see how they do it on the college level with Washington State. That'll be interesting. But we have a busy show planned for you and yours today. The biggest area of concern for LSU as they begin their journey, and so many people have LSU right up there, battling, being a playoff contender. For them to get to that point, the offensive line has to come together. They've got to stay injury-free, or if they don't stay injury-free, players are going to have to step up. Players are going to have to be versatile, and they're going to have to really be quick on their feet with their thought process. Chris Truax was a man in the trenches for LSU. His father, just inducted into the Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame, was a terrific football player for LSU, Saints, Cowboys, all that. Chris Truax will join us, talk about the nuances of the offensive line and where he thinks this LSU offensive line stands. Hour number two. We're going to take a break from football for a minute. He goes by the name of Mike G. He is a performance coach out in Los Angeles. And many, many, many of an NBA player has gone out to utilize his expertise, including Drew Holiday. And he has been the personal trainer of Drew Holiday for several years now. He's also training Jahlil Okafor. We're going to get inside the mind of Mike G and how he trains these God-given, gifted athletes to become even better with weightlifting and cardiovascular and movement and sleep and diet. We'll get into the mind of Mike G. And then Michael Hugenin will join us, as he does each and every Wednesday, and we'll continue to do so. We've got college football. We got two live games this weekend, Miami and Florida, Arizona at Hawaii. And we'll get Mike's thoughts on that. Plus, does he take Clemson and Alabama for the championship, or does he take the field? There's a whole lot of other teams out there. Which way is Mike Hugenin going when it comes to who's going to be playing for the national championship of college football? I kind of have an inkling as to where he's going to go. A lot of people say, just forget about the regular season. Let's just get right to it, to the championship game, and let's play Clemson versus Alabama yet again. We will see what happens along those lines. As I said earlier, the Saints will break camp after practice tomorrow. Drew Brees, after practice today, gave a ringing endorsement to one of his wide receivers by the name of Austin Carr.
I think Austin has had a great camp. He continues to get better each day. I'm really developing a lot of confidence in him. There's a lot of little subtle things that he does well. I mean, at the end of the day, for a receiver, you know, there's a timing and there's a feel to everything, right? It's, you know, where am I in the progression? When is the quarterback going to be ready to throw it to me? How can I get separation? How can I get open? How can I be available for him? And Austin has a lot of that feel to him, which...
which sounds like a ringing endorsement as the Saints try to figure out who their wide receiver core is going to be as part of their 53-man roster. Sounds like Austin Carr has the confidence of his quarterback, and I think that's all that Sean Payton needs to know. We'll get into a couple of stories later on in the program, including the XFL has revealed the names and the logos for its 8 teams, and we'll break them down. They got some really, really, really good ones. Baker Mayfield now has reached out to Giants rookie quarterback Daniel Jones to clear the air after coming out and telling in a magazine article that he was stunned that the Giants took Daniel Jones with the 6th overall pick. He said it blew him away, and now he's backtracking. So who do you believe? Somebody got in the ear of Baker Mayfield, probably his agent, saying, Baker, come on, man. Why are you attacking this guy? You're blowing endorsement deals. All the, you know, Madison Avenue wants guys that are going to say the right things, do the right things. They're sellable. You're not sellable. You're acting like Johnny Manziel now, and don't do that. So Baker Mayfield retracts his statement, saying he was grossly taken out of context. Really? No, it wasn't. You know exactly what you were doing. You just got a big mouth. You got a big mouth. That's all there is to it. And Boy, if you're a fan of the Detroit Tigers, you are an overwhelming underdog tonight against the Houston Astros with Justin Verlander on the bump. He might be the biggest underdog in Major League Baseball history. Remember, it wasn't just a few days to a week ago that the Baltimore Orioles were huge underdogs to the Astros. The Orioles won the game 8-7, claiming it the biggest upset in Major League Baseball history. Can the Detroit Tigers do it again, as the odds are even higher in the favor of the Houston Astros tonight? How about that? How about that? And ESPN has revealed that in 100 years of greatness, the best players ever in NFL history. How do you pick that? Some, I think, are an absolute given. For instance, wide receiver, hey, no doubt, Jerry Rice is the GOAT. Linebacker, there is no doubt whatsoever that Mr. Lawrence of the New York Giants is the greatest ever. I don't think there's any question about that. But boy, there's some other positions out there that are very, very interesting. And we will go over that list when we return, because the NFL's 100th season is set to begin. College football's 150th season is set to begin. It's quite a year of football on both levels. We'll go over who's the best quarterback, who's the best running back, who's the best defensive back. We'll go over it all next. Oh, by the way, LSU basketball closed out its tour of Spain with a 101-77 victory over FC Barcelona Silver today. The Tigers will fly back to the States and to Baton Rouge tomorrow. They ended up their trip 3-1. They lost the opener, and then they won three straight against lesser competition. But, hey, nobody got hurt. Everybody had a good time. It was a great experience, and we'll talk later on to Will Wade exactly about the trip, what he gained from it, and what the experiences were like. Who is the greatest players to ever play in the NFL? We'll go over one list next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station, and boy, it looks like it's getting ready to pour down rain. We'll be back.
Are the chickens ready for their audition to be the new spokefowl for the lottery's winner, winner, chicken, dinner, instant scratch-off?
You bet.
Okay, lottery chicken audition. Take one and go.
So, I'm supposed to talk into this? Can someone tell me what my motivation is here?
Next.
Stella! How was that? Stella!
Play Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner from the lottery. Win up to $100,000. Scratch the back for even more chances to win. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
Next.
Once more, unto the preach, dear friends.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 18 minutes after the hour here on the Jordy Hultberg Show, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Right there at Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Great lunch specials each and every day. LSU practice report. Tyler Shelvin, Brink Fajoco, Justin Thomas missed practice. Fajoco missed his second straight practice. Thomas, junior end, has now missed five practices in a row. Shelvin's competing for time with freshman Apu Aika, who practiced in a gold non-contact jersey on Tuesday. Coach O considers them both starters, plans to rotate them in and out of games in the secondary. Safety Marcel Brooks, sophomore safety Darian Moore were not present. So, and one other freshman, Ray Parker, ran through individual drills with the defense for the first time during LSU's football practice Tuesday. He spent the beginning of preseason camp as a tight end. He's a 6'5" target out of Ruston High School. When he signed, with LSU. The Tigers plan to convert him into an offensive tackle, but now he's looking to work on the defensive side of things. So Braden Fehoko from tackle to guard. I think he's better suited there. Tigers trying to figure out, and we'll talk with Chris Truax here shortly about the LSU offensive line. But the NFL's got their 100th anniversary this season, and they plan some big special events. And one list came out of the greatest players position by position in NFL history. They pick at quarterback Tom Brady, a 14-time Pro Bowl selection, 6-time Super Bowl winner on teams that feature far fewer Hall of Famers than those of many of the other marquee quarterbacks. At wide receiver, no question, Jerry Rice, 13-time Pro Bowl selection, led the league in receiving yards 6 times and receiving touchdowns 6 times. Is the NFL's all-time leader in receptions, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, and yards from scrimmage. He played in 29 playoff games, had 22 touchdown receptions in those games. No arguing there. The other wide receiver goes way back in time, back in the 30s to mid-40s, and that's Don Hutson, the Hall of Fame class of 1963 with the Green Bay Packers. He held 18 NFL records when he retired, and he had more than 200 receptions than his nearest competitor. Had a record of 99 career touchdown receptions that stood for almost 40 years after his last games. He also had 30 career interceptions at safety, and he kicked extra points. How about Don Hutson? Running back, Jim Brown, Cleveland Browns. 7 seasons, averaged more than 100 yards rushing per game. Enough said about Jim Brown. The other running back, Walter Payton, 10 seasons with more than 320 touches. He retired as the league's all-time leading rusher. At the age of 32, he had 321 carries for 1,333 yards. You can start the argument, Barry Sanders of Detroit, maybe Emmitt Smith of Dallas. Along the offensive line, best left tackle ever, Anthony Munoz of the Cincinnati Bengals. Guard, John Hanna of the New England Patriots. He was a 9-time Pro Bowl selection, 7-time All-Pro. Coach Bear Bryant of Alabama called Hanna the greatest lineman he ever coached. At center, double zero for the Oakland Raiders, Jim Otto. On the right side, at guard, Jim Parker. And on the right side, at tackle, Forrest Gregg, an all-NFL pick for 8 consecutive seasons. Led that Vince Lombardi, Bart Starr, Jim Brown, Jimmy Taylor, Paul Hornung offense like crazy. At tight end, Tony Gonzalez, over people like Mike Ditka, John Mackey, and Kellen Winslow. So you can make an argument for some of them, but I think some of them are clear cut. On the defensive side, at defensive end, Reggie White. Wow. He had 3 sacks in Super Bowl 31. Pretty good. And then old school, other defensive end, Deacon Jones of the L.A. Rams. Unbelievable. In the tackles, Mean Joe Green of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Merlin Olsen of the fearsome foursome of the Los Angeles Rams. Pretty darn good. Linebacker Lawrence Taylor, hands down. Hands down. One of 2 defensive players to win league MVP. He was the greatest. Ever the greatest. Middle linebacker, Dick Butkus of the Chicago Bears, ahead of people like Willie Lanier of the Chiefs, Jack Lambert of the Steelers, Joe Schmidt of the Lions, Ray Lewis of the Ravens. Another outside linebacker, Bobby Bell. NFL record, 6 interceptions for touchdowns by a linebacker. Hall of Fame coach Hank Stram once said Bell could have played any position on the field except for quarterback and was athletic enough to have scored on his only kickoff return, a 53-yard return of an onside kick. He was spectacular. Cornerbacks, prime time, Deion Sanders. Oh, yeah. Nothing like prime time. Old number 21. And Rod Woodson, who was fantastic for the Steelers predominantly, then the 49ers, and closing out his career with the Baltimore Ravens. At the safety position, Ken Houston of the Houston Oilers and Ronnie Lott of the 49ers. Special teamers, I think some of these are a no-brainer. Kicker Adam Vinatieri made 56 playoff field goals. That's pretty darn good. Morton Anderson of the Saints is listed as a candidate there. Ray Guy, the punter for the Oakland Raiders, just spectacular. And the greatest returner I ever saw, Gale Sayers of the Chicago Bears. I remember one game in his rookie season. He had 6 touchdowns against the 49ers. He had an 80-yard touchdown reception, a 77-yard punt return, and a 93-yard kickoff return. He averaged more than 31 yards per kickoff return in each of his first 3 years in the league. Knee injuries. Boy, if he had the medical procedure that they have today, back then, there's no telling what he could have done. But he was absolutely special and spectacular. So, and then the coach of all time, they've listed Bill Belichick. There's others. Paul Brown of the Browns, Joe Gibbs of the Redskins, Bill Walsh of the 49ers, Don Shula of the Colts, and of course Vince Lombardi with the Packers predominantly. But look, he was fired from his first NFL head coaching job, has a losing record in games in which Tom Brady's not the starting quarterback, but in the end, 6 Super Bowl wins in 9 Super Bowl trips trumps it all. So that's just one group's opinion. So many great players, so many tremendous stories along the way as the NFL gets ready for season number 100. Season number 150 in college football could be a special year for LSU. Is this the year that they get over the hump? But they can't just have their eyes on Alabama. There's a lot of landmines along the way before and after it. It's a tough, tough schedule. No question. We'll find out a lot more about the Florida Gators this weekend because that's a big, big game for LSU. Of course, we've got Texas coming up in week number 2. But for LSU to attain their goals and their aspirations, they've got to get some continuity. They've got to get some cohesiveness. They've got to get better up front on that offensive line. Chris Truax played offensive line for LSU. We'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax and talk about his dad. What a great player. Won a Super Bowl with the, how about them Cowboys? All-American at LSU. We'll talk all, we'll chew the fat with Chris Truax coming up next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back, boys and girls. Biggest sense of worry for LSU fans is the offensive line. And I got to go to my go-to guy. You've never experienced a football game unless you've sat next to my next guest. And this segment brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in lovely Hackberry, Louisiana. It's a great place for fishing, hunting, shrimping, crabbing, bird watching. And you may even see my good friend Chris Truax there, who is kind enough to join us now. CT, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, brother. I appreciate the great introduction. I tell you what, you guys taking something hot and dousing it with gasoline. I love it, man. That's a great analogy, man. So you promote it. Rock on. I like it. I'm doing good, man. I'm getting ready for football season. How you feeling, man?
It is here. It's about 10 days away. Before we get, I'm feeling good, man, except I'm worried about my offensive line. That's why I called you.
Sure.
Because I know it's, boy, it takes cohesiveness. It takes togetherness. It takes talent. What are your thoughts on this LSU offensive line as this season is upon us?
Well, you know, Jordy, you and I have visited about this because you win and lose in a line of scrimmage, both the offensive line and the defensive line.
Yep.
And, you know, the key word is really congruency. It's getting five guys to play really as one. Because when you go a few series and have a 13-15 play drive and you go three and out, you know, you come to the sideline, your offensive line coach is there with you, and he doesn't need five guys giving him five different stories. He needs five guys giving him one story, if that makes sense to you. Your center being a guy named Lloyd Cushenberry, who I'm a huge fan of. Guy that was undervalued in high school recruiting, local guy to Dutchtown. You know what? If he has a solid and consistent senior year, he's going to be a mid to early round draft pick. And so when you've got Lloyd there in the middle, that means a lot because he and that quarterback, obviously being Joe Burrow, you know, and the new RPO offense and quick tempo, those two got to be able to communicate. And Lloyd's got to be able to pass those calls up and down the line of scrimmage and go. I know they've had some hiccups, some bumps and bruises in the offensive line, but everybody in the country goes through that as well, too. I think the coaches have their five guys circled of who they're wanting in there, and they're going to get tested early on. You know, Georgia Southern is going to be an exciting opponent coming into Tiger Stadium.
Chris, when you see a quarterback like Joe Burrow, and you saw him evolve through the course of the year, and then toward the end of the season, some of the things he was doing, is that the kind of quarterback offensive lineman like? The guy, I mean, it looks like he'd run through a brick wall for you, and I think you would probably do the same for him.
Yeah, you know, you look at Joe, what a competitor. And, you know, I love players that are coaches' kids because I think they've got an acumen about them that other kids don't have, maybe, you know, a sixth sense when it comes out there, when it comes to competing and understanding, have a little bit more knowledge about maybe the game than other quarterbacks have. And you can tell just by his demeanor and his body presence, you know, on the field and on the sideline, Jordy, a lot of times I like to watch the kids not really after a touchdown because, hey, that's what you're expected to do. I like them when they go three and out and people are frustrated. They get a penalty and they get a third and long and don't complete it, and they come to the sideline. And to really kind of see the semantics on that sideline to see, hey, how's the communication or where the breakdown was? And you always see Joe, it doesn't matter good or bad, having a consistent dialogue with his coaches or his receivers or his offensive linemen on the sideline. So I really love that young man's composure, and that's what it takes to win a championship.
Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. Offensive lineman, we're going to do this throughout the course of the college football season and break it all down. You offensive linemen love those guys, those running backs that make you look good, don't you? A guy that's shifty, can get into the hole quick. You don't have to hold that block very long, and it just makes you look good, right?
Jordy, let me tell you something. I was blessed to play with Sammy Martin, Eddie Fuller, Harvey Williams. I mean, that's just three of the premier running backs that we had. And, of course, LSU, that's what you're known for. I mean, first-round draft play. So, yeah, you know, that's why they like big guys. Hey, look, just stay square. Give the running back a chance to get to the line of scrimmage, and he'll do the rest. But you also know, you know, having those guys in the backfield, if you take a St. Hilaire kid, that he's proven that he can play in the league, that I don't think he's really a game changer, but he's a very consistent back, and you know what you're going to get out of him. I'm hearing high praises on both the two young running backs, the Henry kid, and I'm drawing a blank on the other young man. But those are truly
games. Emory and Davis.
Emory, okay, and that those I'm hearing are game changers. So, you know, it makes you work a little bit hotter, you know, trying to hold your block, your combination block, your single block a little bit longer, knowing if you can get those guys past the line of scrimmage, they got a chance to make a difference.
Chris, you did those two-a-days back in the day. They got it easy now, right? All this rules and how many hours you can practice. They got it easy. But what's training camp like now? I mean, are you just sick and tired of it?
Jordan, there's no doubt about it. Yeah, it's funny. You know, nowadays, those guys get 20 hours a week. You know, I mean, that's it. And three of those hours per week are considered game time. So they've got 17 hours a week. Of course, now they can come back to their VIP lounge and, you know, their first-class lounge chairs they've got there, plugging their iPads and lay down. And they want to get something to eat, go get something to eat. It ain't old Broussard Hall or taking a bus or walking over or anything like that, you know. But I think this is where this type of week right now, the coaches really have to do a good job of managing getting those players' legs back a little bit. Between the staff, you know, LSU's got one of the premier training staffs and a strength coach that the head coach is going to listen to this phase in training camp, because it's time to start focusing on Georgia Southern.
How nasty is it in those pileups when those offensive linemen and those defensive linemen, you're tired, you're angry, you're frustrated? It must get nasty in some of those pileups.
You know what? The linemen ain't doing a bunch of talking. It's the guys on the second and third level. It's the linebackers and the safeties that are bumping their gums and talking a bunch of trash on Saturday nights, you know? Because, hey, the big guy, you're trying to catch your breath and hear the next play and get back in the huddle, you know? All those little premier players that, can win you a championship, those are the guys that are talking the trash. He's like the big boys.
Oh, gosh. Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about your dad, the great Billy Truax, who is just inducted into the All-State Sugar Bowl Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. What was it like having your dad, who was, I mean, was all prep, all state, all American at Holy Cross High School in New Orleans? He was first team all American at LSU, second round NFL draft choice, went on to a 10-year pro career, won Super Bowl VI with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, my goodness gracious, that must have been some kind of a childhood.
Jordy, you know, I thought growing up I had buddies. Well, that wasn't really the case. They were telling their kids to get friends with me so their dads could be friends with my dad, okay? And that's kind of how my childhood went. But it was a blur from the Los Angeles Rams and the Dallas Cowboys. And having that honor, you know, my dad went to boarding school when he was 13 at Holy Cross and never looked back. And, between going to Holy Cross and having his accolades and going to LSU and playing for Coach McClendon and then going out and playing for, George Allen out there at the Rams and getting playing for Tom Landry and besides his assistant coaches, he had a lot of great memories. And sitting in that banquet this past weekend and seeing, you know, Pat Swilligan there, and Ed Reed, and my father, and I apologize, but the coach from Rumble, the basketball coach,
that's awesome,
that got inducted as well. It was tremendous, you know, a lot of respect for different age groups, a lot of fun.
I'll tell you a funny story about that Rumble basketball coach. His name is Jim Robarts. Back then, he was the coach at Rummel when I was coming up in grade school. And, you know, they did some recruiting back then in the day. So he invited me and my father and mother to his office. And we went and visited. And he said, you know what? You're a good player. I could see you being on the varsity when you're a junior. And you could probably start for us when you're a senior. And I said, really? Okay, thank you, coach. See you later. Went to De La Salle, started as a freshman. We beat Rummel at their gym, and we did the old handshake down the line, and he said, I think I made a big mistake on you. And I just laughed. I said, that's all right, coach, and that's the story. But anyway, enough of me. So, Chris, again, we look forward to talking to you throughout the course of this college football season. I know the signal right now in Hackberry and all getting around here is bad, but we are heavily leaning on your expertise. So walk Tiger fans back off the cliff. Are you confident that this LSU offensive line, you've said it, you got to win in the trenches. And for LSU to reach the goals that they want to reach, this offensive line has to step up. Are you confident that they can and will do that?
Let me tell you, these are my thoughts. I know we're going to be really strong in the middle between the center and both guards. I think it's Sadiq Charles. He's such a premier athlete. They can control, slow his feet down a little bit and play a little bit more maturity and understand the left tackle spot. I think we're in really good shape right there. I don't know. Right now, my thoughts are still out on the right tackle position right now, Jordy. So if somebody from this week to next week can really show up and separate themselves at the right tackle spot, I really think we're going to have a great starting five here to start the season.
Truex looks like he can still go. I may have to suit you up for one of these. Maybe when they go to Austin, I'll suit you up and get you on the plane and let you play one more time. But CT, always great visiting with you. We look forward to doing this each and every Wednesday. So be ready, okay?
You got it, my friend. Thank you, Jordy. Good luck. God bless. We'll see you soon.
You got it, man. Chris Truex, kind enough to join us. A terrific player for LSU back in the day. He had some good. Harvey Williams was one heck of a running back. There's no question about that. His dad was spectacular. 6'5", 240. Back in the day, a prototype type tight end. Never caught the ball much at LSU because they didn't throw the ball that much, but had a great pro career. So that's a football family, and they love LSU. And, again, you ain't been to a ball game unless you sit next to Chris Truex. He is something. Something else. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two here. The Jordy Helpert Show, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Frankie, man, he loves the Tigers, loves the Cajuns, loves the Saints, loves the Pelicans, loves them all. He'll talk your head off. In the meantime, he's got everything in his store that you need, including that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner on the right-hand side when you walk in. Cheeseburger, unbelievable, and yet so much more. Cook to order, fresh, hot, dine in, take it to go. Whether you're 50, 500 miles away from your destination, DC's Little Capital Exxon will take care of you. I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Back after this.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a steak. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, we welcome you back 15 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday, the 21st day of August. Don't forget, we've got fantasy football stuff coming up for you, and we're looking forward to all those opportunities to get to meet you at Twin Peaks, and we're looking forward to that. So check 1037thegame.com for all the opportunities that present itself for you. SEC football. You know, college football celebrating their 150th anniversary. And one of the poster children of the SEC, he was there at SEC Media Days, was Herschel Walker. And I remember what a great athlete he was. And my one story I know about Herschel Walker is he was on campus at the same time Dominique Wilkins was there. And that's when I played. And I remember seeing Dominique drive up to the gym the day before we were going to play Georgia. We just finished practicing. He was driving up, and he was in this beautiful El Dorado Cadillac convertible. I was like, man, look at that. And I said, Dominic, what a car. He goes, yeah, if you think that's good, you ought to see the cars that Herschel drives. Anyway, I'm not saying, I'm not implying, I'm not implicating, I'm just saying. But Herschel Walker was that, and I was just taken aback by Herschel Walker saying he almost, you know, he was going to go to the Marines. He wasn't going to play football. He was going to go to the Marines. And his mother on an Easter Sunday said, "Don't you think it's time you decide what you want to do?" So Herschel pulls out a coin, flips it between the military and college. It came up college. And then it was Herschel Walker said, "Oh, gosh, I got to make a decision between Georgia and Clemson." Georgia won. Wow. Then he took another coin flip because he had to decide now between Georgia and USC. Apparently, Herschel loved California. Well, it came up Georgia again, and Herschel Walker ended up down in the South. And now we know one pillar of Southern football hung on good fortune. It just did. And football in the South, you know, we've talked to people like Ross Dellinger who traveled the country, and there's a difference. There's a difference. It's just, it does mean more. They picked the perfect slogan. It just means more. My buddy Tony Barnhart has told me before, he does work on the SEC network. He does work on the Big Ten network. He says, if you live in the Big Ten footprint and you don't get the network, you're going to call your cable provider. But if you live in the SEC footprint and you don't get the SEC network, somebody's house is going to get burned down. That's the difference. They take it personal. It's amazing. More 90,000 plus seat stadiums in the South. It's just different than any other part in the country. It's, you know, you got Bo Jackson as a pillar. You got other pillars like Bear Bryant and Steve Spurrier and Nick Saban, Eddie Robinson of Grambling, Bo Jackson and Tim Tebow, just to name a few. They're something. They are something. It just does mean a lot more. And that's why it's such a big, big buildup. You see stores in the areas for Raging Cajun fans and LSU fans. Now they're going out to buy their apparel. People have their parties with their RVs to get the RVs ready for the season. They're stocking it up with booze, and they're getting everything ready, checking the air pressure and cleaning things up and getting it all ready. It's just a fun time. And it extends even more so because you see so many players from this part of the world end up playing on Sundays. And it's like a culture shock to some, like Joe Burrow, the Ohio native who transferred from Ohio State. And he found out firsthand. He says he tells his story during camp. "I went to get a salad and everybody started making fun of me. I eat salad. People in Louisiana don't like to eat salad. They like to eat other stuff." Yeah. And you know, a poor man can walk through an LSU tailgate and get enough to eat and drink without spending a dime. Right? Well, spend without a dime. So when you leave an LSU tailgate, you can barely walk. Your pant size go up two sizes. You're exhausted. You're full. It's just a big party. It's prideful. Yes, indeed. And beginning in 2006, the SEC won 7 consecutive national championships. Teams from southern states have won 12 of the last 13, with Clemson, Florida State, and Texas joining those from the SEC. This is something. And the dominance of the South carries over into all areas of football. The last 3 winners of the Bronco Nagurski Trophy, given to the defensive players of the year, have been from the South. 8 of the last 14 first quarterbacks taken in the NFL draft were from Southern schools. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Clemson last year had its entire starting defensive line drafted in the first 4 rounds. Huh, how about that? So, we're getting ready. Death Valley on a Saturday night. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. All right, that wraps up hour number 1. We got a busy hour number 2. Hot Topic starts the way. performance coach for Drew Holiday will join us, and it's Hump Day with Huguenin. All coming your way. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We are Acadiana's sports station.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go. Hope you're high and dry on this Wednesday, the 21st day of August. This hour brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets with over 60 locations in southern and central Louisiana. You'll find a ShopRite anywhere you go, and there's a reason for it, because they've got everything you need. We're all convenience shoppers. Go to ShopRite. They've got the best prices, the best selection for everything you need. The cleanest restrooms, great hot lunches and breakfasts, coffee, hot, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Boy, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. My boy is all excited, so let me get right to it. Let's take our daily walk around the old sports water cooler so he can talk about the XFL. My main man, CD, push that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, let's get to it, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jordy. I'm doing fantastic, especially with the announcement of the eight XFL teams as part of its inaugural year and the logos. And I think, obviously, I'm looking towards trying to get some season tickets for the Houston Oilers. Oh, excuse me. It's the Houston Roughnecks, Jordy. One of the many teams. I definitely think that's the big highlight, though.
I like seeing that. I like that name.
The logo is definitely, it looks pretty obviously a playoff of the original Houston Oilers logo. But I have to say, Jordy.
Houston Oilers, something.
But outside of that, Jordy, everything else was pretty interesting, seeing how they handle things. Because I think the best one of them all has to be, without a doubt, the Seattle Dragons, Jordy. That one has me intrigued, to say the least. A team, I feel like they're the favorites right now, just based off of that name. And meanwhile, the LA Wildcats. Can we stop having Los Angeles teams have LA in their logos?
Okay, here, look. Here's the name. Let's go with it. Dallas Renegades.
Okay.
Love it.
Same
Houston
here.
Houston Roughnecks. Outstanding. LA Wildcats. I love the New York Guardians. I think that's awesome.
I mean, it's...
St. Louis Battlehawks. I like the Seattle Dragons. I love the Tampa Bay Vipers. Washington Defenders, not so good.
The DC Defenders, Jordy. How can you not love a little alliteration? I feel like that one. I love it simply because of the alliteration, and the logo looks really great. But the New York Guardians really takes the cake for me, simply because of the fact their video package profiled a lot of gargoyles. That just looked really, really cool, even though I feel like, you know, maybe try and make it the Empire State Guardians would seem a lot more awesome. But again, like I said, beggars can't be choosers, Jordy.
Well, look, they're going to have a draft coming up in October. They're going to, followed by a mini camp in December, training camp in January, and kicking off February of 2020.
Yes.
XFL. But they got to come up with a rule book. What kind of rules are they going to have this year?
Well, Jordy, I mean, that's this question we're going to have to ask Oliver Luck down the line. He's definitely going to be handling a lot of the rules. I think it will wind up seeming to be very similar to the NFL, maybe have some stuff from the remnants of the AAF, because the AAF had a lot of great ideas, but, you know, just didn't have enough money to stay afloat, Jordy. But flipping it over from the XFL to college football, Jordy, and we got to move it over towards betonline.ag put out the over-under wins for the Sun Belt Conference earlier today. And there's just one thing in particular I think everybody's looking at when it comes to it is involving the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. The over-under, according to betonline.ag, 4.5. Jordy, 4.5.
What?
Yes.
What?
You heard me right,
Jordy. I'm betting way over on that one, please.
I'm trying to hurry up and make my way to Mississippi before August 31st and throw down some serious ducats on that because, honestly, I might be able to make a whole lot of money off of 4.5 wins. I don't know what's going on there because you look around the country, like a lot of them have them at over under 6. That one seems fair. This one feels like betonline.ag is giving us like free money at this point. So that being said, Cajuns fans, go put some money down on it.
Send that to Napier, please. Send it to Matt Sullivan and his crew and just send that over there and let them put it up on every locker out there. I mean, come on.
That's bulletin board material right there.
Slap in the face. That's ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous, Jordy, what's going on with that. I don't know what they're doing in terms of what's going on with betonline.ag and why they're not necessarily leaning towards what everybody else is in the sports books where we're seeing it be 6 wins. But again, this is coming courtesy of Brett McMurphy, who's been throwing out all these betting lines over the last few days. This one, I'm definitely intrigued, to say the least. But speaking of odds and morning lines, I think we got to bring up the Astros minus 500 in a lot of the sports books, some of them as high as 550-point favorites, Jordy, heading into their third game of the 4-game set against the Detroit Tigers. This is the second time this year they've been picked that highly. This happened a while back. I believe it might have been like 450 or so when they took on the Baltimore Orioles with Justin Verlander on the mound. That is amazing to see how high the odds are for the Astros to come away with the win over the Detroit Tigers.
As I recall, they lost to the Orioles in that game. In fact, the Orioles, they were calling it the biggest upset in Major League Baseball at that point in time. So there have been some other ones. Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers were a minus 485 favorites over the Atlanta Braves in 2016. And as you said, the Astros were minus 460 road favorites over the Orioles. The Astros lost that game 8-7. So we'll see. But look, Daniel Norris is on the hill for the Tigers, a left-hander. Justin Verlander. Man, that's a lot of – man, that's a big old spread there. Jeez-o. But the Astros are the World Series favorites at plus 200. Chuck Woods Tigers are no longer listed on the odds to win the World Series, although he is a true blue. Anything Detroit, Chuck Wood is just loves them. Sorry.
Exactly. But, man, that's definitely going to be a fun kind of storyline. Can the Astros be able to not have the biggest upset of all time twice in about 3 weeks? Time, again, Justin Verlander is absolutely phenomenal. It's that bullpen that's just a little bit suspect. And now that Carlos Correa out of the lineup due to some back soreness after being away for 2 months due to that rib injury, just can't quite get right, especially during the crunch time of the season. But it feels like everybody else is putting in work, especially George Springer, Jose Altuve, and then the young buck, Yordan Alvarez, who seems like we've talked about him before, Jordy. So why not get your take on that? Is he the rookie of the year in your mind, Yordan Alvarez?
I think he is. I think the numbers back it up. I think where the team stands backs it up. Who else is the competition for? I think he is, yes. Just another star that the Astros seem to develop and get them going and get them ready, get them right, and then they deliver. So it's just a well-run organization. They just do a tremendous job.
They really do, Jordy. And one more for you before we get out of here, and that involves Royce White. He's talking about Carmelo Anthony And I want to get your thoughts on this because of the fact that Royce White was saying that Melo's blackballed from the league now. And a lot of that has to do with LeBron James. Do you think LeBron James has that much power to get Carmelo Anthony blackballed from the National Basketball Association?
LeBron's pretty powerful, but that's his boy. He's not blackballing Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony can't play anymore. All he is is a catch and shoot guy. He plays no defense. He can't get up and down the floor. And what's he going to do? Come off the bench as your seventh or eighth player, demanding the money that he wants to demand? No. Carmelo wants to be a starter. He wants to be a star. That ship has long since sailed. But LeBron's pretty powerful. There ain't no doubt in that. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Best hot sauce every day. Do yourself a flavor. Bring yourself a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Trainer to the stars next.
Are you The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, welcome back. We take a change of pace from the oncoming college and NFL football seasons. Anybody that has a Twitter handle of at Mr. Do It Moving, I got to talk to him because you know me. I love NBA basketball, the Pelicans. And when David Griffin gave the kind of the planted the seed in Drew Holiday's mind, hey, you could be the MVP. I know Drew is working and working hard and guiding him as his performance coach is our next guest. He simply goes by Coach Mike G. He's out in Los Angeles, and Mike is kind enough to join us this afternoon. Mike, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm driving in, you know, 80-degree weather in Southern California. What more could you want? So thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure.
Well, how did you get in the world of performance coaching, and how did you rise to such stardom so relatively quickly?
Well, like you, as an athlete, you grow an affinity to training because you want to gain an edge. You want to gain a competitive edge. I grew up playing American football. I played receiver at the Division II, and I was never gifted with speed or size, so I had to make up somewhere else. And in that process, I fell in love with working out in the weight room, on the field, agility, you know, all these extra curricular activities that didn't involve a football, and that's essentially the path that I took to become a coach. I figured, hey, if I couldn't become an NFL football player, why not help others get to that level, which turned into help athletes in general. So here I am.
Here you are. Drew Holiday, I've always been a fan of his, and I've watched him grow throughout his career. He's got God-given ability. There's no question about that. So how do you make Drew Holiday even better and maybe help him achieve some individual goals along with the team goals that he set for himself?
I think as we become more acquainted with Drew Holiday as a basketball player because of his recent ability to stay healthy, you start to learn more about who he is as a player. You get more information. You get to see the different stressors that he experiences on a night-in, night-out basis. Those that follow him closely know that he usually leads the league or is in the top five in minutes played as well as distance traveled. So our philosophy is going to definitely revolve around just that. You know, he is a dog on the basketball court. Anybody that knows him or plays with him knows that when Drew Holiday is in front of you, you have a long night ahead of you. And he puts out on every single play, on every single in every single game. So we have to prepare for that. We have to train his body for that. Mm-hmm. And again, like you, being a basketball player, it's one of the most physical, rigorous sports that I can think of in terms of changing direction, landing,
right,
absorbing forces. You know, there's all these different types of stressors. And because he leads the league in minutes played and distance traveled, I think that's where the training philosophy is going to start. How can we keep him? What's the most important availability, Jordy? Or what's the most important ability?
Yeah.
Availability. So we got to keep him available, which means right. we have to train him to be able to sustain that long for that long of a season.
Coach Mike G, follow him on Twitter at Mr. Do It Moving. I'm sure that diet comes into play. I'm sure that sleep habits and sleep environment come into play. Have you noticed a change in Drew? I mean, now that Anthony Davis is gone, it is his team. Have you noticed a new attitude about him?
Nothing new. Same job,
okay.
different role, but same mindset. And that's the beauty about Drew Holiday is because he takes every day just as serious as if he were, if AD was coming back. You know, like, yes, the role is bigger, mm-hmm. yes. There's more weight being put on his shoulders, but go back 1 year removed, and he's exactly approaching every day the same way, which is why he's the easiest person to work with. You're always going to get his best, and it doesn't matter what's uh-huh. ahead of him. He understands that the way I play, I need to train for it, and I need to prepare for it. So he really bought into that early before – you know, 5 years ago, he bought into that. So it's been just right. really fulfilling and really gratifying to watch him grow and succeed, stay healthy, and now become and step into this role. And, you know, he's going to do super well, and I'm excited, and we all should be.
Mike, I'm really curious about another one of your clients who happens to be a New Orleans Pelican. And I just, here again, I'm another fan of his, and it looks like he has transformed himself. He's really young. He's only like 23 years old, but Jahlil Okafor seems to be an old soul. But, boy, he looks good. How have his training habits been?
I think you described it perfectly. I've never really thought about it like that. I often forget that he's so young, 23 years old. I can't believe it, but he comes off so mature in regards to how he approaches uh-huh. every day, asking all the right questions, super in tuned and listen to everything that I say. Well, what about this? What about that? Like you said before, nutrition, sleep, habits that we start to develop off the court, out of the weight room. Can we get the super low-hanging fruit there to really help us on the court? And he is exactly that. Like you just said, he is an old soul in the sense that his wisdom precedes him. And I think that's what we see. That's what we're going to see. I think that this year is going to be a big year for him. His sky is the limit, not to be cliche, but super high ceiling. You know what I mean? And I feel like his potential is yet to be tapped into.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's doing all the things right off the court, I think is going to really show up on the court. And again, very exciting time right now for him.
Mike G, performance coach for superstar athletes. It's got to be rewarding. It's got to be a big challenge for you each and every day to come up with creative new ideas on how to develop the, you know, basketball muscles are different than football muscles and different from baseball muscles. It's a unique set. I'm sure you train athletes across the board, but basketball is unique and different, isn't it?
To a T, unique and different. I have become a movement geek as it relates to basketball. I study basketball not from a fan standpoint, watching the ball go in the basketball. How do these guys really move? And offensive movement is much different than defensive movement, as you will know. You have super skillful offensive players that may not possess high athletic kinesthetic awareness or intelligence, meaning they aren't super athletic, but somehow they're super skilled offensively, which allows them to do well on the court. And then the defense mm-hmm. is a lot about mindset and a lot about motivation, which is why I think most of the game is played offensively. It's high scoring games because defense isn't stressed as much. So to really delve into the science part of movement and reformulate and reverse engineer it as it relates to basketball is something that's been a journey for me because I didn't grow up playing it, but has been very enjoyable. Right. I just love I'm a huge fan of basketball. Now, I play it all the time, even though I'm not very good. because, you know, it's just like you said, it's much different than any other sport. Absolutely, exactly. You know, you got to, in my world as a trainer, as a coach, you need to know what these guys are going through, all the different, you need to feel the forces. You need to feel change direction. You need to, just, you need to be able to.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, you need to be able to put yourself in their shoes so that when you just start to design programs and come up with different ways to train and make them better physically, you're hitting the bullseye every time. Because if you don't understand the movement demand, you're not really you're not really moving towards the goal of being a better athlete on the court. So, and you know, I say all that to
so
say
much
this,
builds into it.
So much. You know, yeah, so much we can't train.
Yeah, so much that goes into it. Mike.
Go ahead.
Mike, in closing, and I'm sorry for interrupting there. In closing, you see all these high-level, highly gifted, highly talented athletes, but they've got that one thing in common, right, that competitive drive that kind of sets them apart from others. Would that be an accurate assessment?
You know, you're in a room full of alphas because at one point in their basketball career, they were the best on their team. They were the best on the court. They were the best in their respective areas or tribes, if you will, which means that takes a certain personality. So being able to get the attention of these alphas is definitely a challenge, but it's a fun challenge, and I love it, and we have fun with it.
Mike G, performance trainer. He takes care of Drew Holiday, Jahlil Okafor. He's working with Anthony Davis, amongst many, many others out there in Los Angeles. I mean, that's the home of NBA players, right? I mean, the offseason, everybody goes to L.A. It must be the weather. Or it must be you.
I'd like to think it's me, but there's something special about L.A. I'm not sure what it is. Weather, we'll just keep it.
There you go. Well, Mike, thanks for the time, buddy. It was very enlightening, and continued success to you.
Hey, man, thank you so much for having me, Jordy. I look forward to meeting you in person, and go Pels.
Yep. You got it, brother. We'll see you down in Nolens. Mike G. Speaking of Mike Hugonen, The Athletic, joins us next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Hugonen of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Oh, this is a great week because we've got real live college football this weekend. Two games on tap. Miami versus the Florida Gators, Hawaii and Arizona, and Michael Hugonen of The Athletic will join us each and every week to talk about the games that were and look ahead to the games that will be. Mike, good afternoon, my friend. Miami versus Florida, you're living that part of the world. How does that rivalry compare to Miami-Florida State? Which one is the bigger of the two?
Oh, there's no question, Miami-Florida State. Miami-Florida was a big deal in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s, back when Florida owned Florida State. Florida State used to be played in October. No one cared. The Florida-Miami game was always near the end of the season. That was the big game. Okay. The teams haven't played on an annual basis. That stopped in 1987. Very few people around remember that those teams actually played on an annual basis. Been more than 30 years. So, the Florida, I think people are excited about the game because the teams don't play. They're in the same state. They signed a 2-year deal to play in 2024 and 2025. And I think that's going to be the situation going forward. They're going to play a couple times every decade, but they're never going to play again on an annual basis.
What happened there? Why, what was the animosity or what was the reasoning by stopping the series?
That's basically when Miami started its ascent into football, becoming a football power. Miami fans will tell you that, oh, that's Florida stopped playing. That's because they were afraid they were going to get beat. It's also around the time the SEC started playing seven conference games. So, and then they played eight. And there was a when Spurrier got to Florida in 1990, he expressed an interest in playing the series on an annual basis. They actually signed to play six games in the 90s. All those were canceled when the SEC went to two divisions and started playing eight conference games. So, and Florida's point, and I think it's frankly true, at that point in time, Miami got much more out of the series than Florida did. Miami didn't bring many fans to Gainesville. The flip side was true. Florida fans showed up in force at the Orange Bowl. So I think Florida figured we can get rid of this game. It's not nearly as big as Florida FSU has become, and that's fine. And Florida FSU remains obviously a pretty big deal on an annual basis.
All right, Michael Hugan in the Athletic. Who do you like in this one and why?
I think Florida's the better team. I think they're better offensively than Miami. I think defensively, I think the teams are pretty even. Miami's offensive line, Florida's offensive line has four new starters. Miami's offensive line has three. I still think Florida is in better shape. Florida has the advantage at quarterback. Florida has the advantage at wide receiver. Florida has the advantage at running back. So unless the Miami defense is a lot better than I think it's a good defense, but unless it's elite level, I think Florida is going to be able to score more easily than Miami. Miami's linebackers, that's one of the their three starters are all four-year starters, which is incredibly rare in this day and age, especially considering that Miami's linebackers are pretty good. The secondary is an issue. There's no proven pass rusher, but the front seven is still pretty good. But I think Florida overall is a better team, and I think Florida's offense is going to be the difference because I think it's a lot better than Miami's.
I guess the big question is, Felipe Franks now year two with Dan Mullen kind of mentoring him. Is he a game changer or is he a game manager? For Florida to ascend, he's got to be a game changer, not just a game manager.
Yeah, he threw 24 touchdown passes last year and six picks. And you look at the stats and go, wow, that's a pretty good year. But you're right, for the most part, he wasn't asked to do all that much, though he did deliver, especially in the last month of the season. He's got good receivers. Florida has a really good receiving core. They got nice linebackers. They have a very intriguing group of tight ends, including two guys, Kyle Pitts and Lucas Kroll, who can get downfield and make big plays. So the surrounding skill position talent is there for Franks to take advantage of. The concern, again, for Florida's four new starting offensive linemen, how good is that line going to be early on? You know, Miami's front seven is going to pose a problem. But I think if Franks throws 25 TD passes this year, Florida's going to be happy. I think the skill position players, the receivers especially, in the tight ends, that's a group that you can see catching 30-plus TD passes because they're that good. How good is Franks going to be? I will say Mullen said he has made more strides since the season ended than he did in his first year there. So he says he knows the offense much better. He knows the reads much quicker, all that kind of stuff. So we'll see if it pays off.
You think Mullen is bringing that swagger back to the Swamp? I mean, can he even come close to getting to where Spurrier was at one point in time with the way that Swamp reverberated?
Yeah, and obviously he was an assistant for Urban Meyer when they won two national titles, so he understands how good Florida can be. I think, though, they have the kind of swag they had when Spurrier was there in those 3 years under Meyer, or 4 years under Meyer, when they were really, really good. You got to win more games, and you got to beat Georgia. They haven't beaten Georgia in a while. They're better than FSU right now. They're better than Miami right now. I think, you know, if you looked at the SEC as a whole, where does Florida rank? When Meyer was there, when Spurrier was there, they were either the first or second best team. They're not the first or second best team right now. So they have a ways to go to truly get the swag back. But I think Florida, in talking to the people around the program, not the players, but the people around the program, there certainly seems to be the idea that, okay, this is the feeling surrounding the program is a lot like it used to be. This isn't Will Muschamp coach Florida. This isn't Jim McElwain coach Florida. This isn't Ron Zook coach Florida. This is a group that has a mindset of the Meyer and Spurrier days. The thing is, having a mindset is good, but it's not the be-all, end-all. You got to win.
Right.
And that's what's left. You know, how good are they going to be this year? They won 10 games last year. You know, obviously, the marquee win was the LSU win. They destroyed Michigan in the bowl game. What kind of carryover is that going to have? And again, it goes back to, can the new offensive line block?
Michael Hugan in The Athletic. We've got another game, Arizona, with the mystery that is Khalil Tate taking on Hawaii. Is Tate had just, for all the great expectations for a year ago, man, did he bomb out.
Yeah, he bombed out as a runner. He became a better passer. I think it was 20, he threw 25 TD passes, which is you look at that, you're like, wow, that's impressive. Then you look at his rushing numbers, 200 or so yards, and you're like, man, this guy was an incredible dual threat weapon in 2017. So what happened in 2018? And unless the pendulum swings back to more of 2017, Arizona's a 6'6 kind of team, maybe even 5'7 or 4'8. I think Tate wanted to become more of a pocket passer. And Arizona, I think, helped him in that regard. But he's never going to be an elite pocket passer. The guy makes plays with his legs. He is incredibly fast. He is a really high-level athlete. He needs to be turned loose in a way. And we'll see if that happens. Hawaii, Hawaii's not bad. Nick Rolovich has done a really good job of reestablishing that program. They have a quarterback, Cole McDonald, who's a pretty big playmaker. They got a couple guys on offense that can score. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says, going to Hawaii for a game is different. It's a long flight, one. I think sometimes the opposing teams, especially when you don't play Hawaii annually, sort of get caught up in all the hoopla of going to Hawaii. So Arizona, is, I think they flew out today. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. Arizona is the more talented team, but it will be interesting to see what kind of season Tate has, and I think we'll get an idea in the opener. This is not an easy opener for Arizona because, again, going to Hawaii can be a difficult proposition.
He is Mike Huguenin of The Athletic. Let's see. Transfer quarterbacks. You got Clemson's former starters now starting at Missouri. Alabama's former starter is now starting at Oklahoma. Georgia's former starter is at Washington, and their former backup is now starting at Ohio State. LSU's starter played as a backup at Ohio State, and Michigan's starter used to start at Ole Miss. The transfer portal has worked well for schools.
Yeah, it has. And I think quarterback is the position I think it's impacted the most by transfers, because if you're a backup running back or a backup wide receiver – or any position on defense, you're going to get 30 snaps a game. If you're a backup offensive lineman, maybe it's 10 to 15. If you're a backup quarterback, you might not get any. So that's the one position where presumably quarterbacks who transfer think the grass has to be greener on the other side of the fence because I ain't playing here. So it's got to be better somewhere else. And in most cases, quarterbacks transfer and they do end up playing. There are some interesting
Michael?
Your starter at Wisconsin, who was 26-6 as a starter, is not going to win the starting job at FSU. And Eason, it's weird, but Chris Peterson is not named a quarterback yet. And we even have a story today where he's talking about, maybe we'll play two, which is bizarre on a lot of levels, but especially from Chris Peterson. So the quarterback transfer portal, then you look at Oklahoma and Ohio State teams. Season top five with transfer quarterbacks who haven't taken a snap for these teams, and there are exceedingly high expectations. Hurts obviously has a proven track record. You cannot say that about Justin Fields, and not only is Justin Fields new, the Ohio State coach is new, obviously Ryan Day, and there's basically an all-new defensive staff at Ohio State as well. So that's a very interesting program to watch this year. Penn State and Michigan, you can make a case that they're the best team in the Big East. They're not; the rosters aren't as good as Ohio State's, but they seem a little bit more stable because, hey, everything Ohio State's new. So that's going to be a very interesting division to watch this year. I still think Ohio State's the best team in that division. I think Fields will be a good quarterback. Penn State's breaking in a new quarterback. Michigan does have Shea Patterson. And talk to people at Michigan, they're like, okay, Patterson last year was sort of square peg, round hole. This year it's going to be more of what he is best at. They brought in Josh Gattis, who had been at Alabama for a year as a co-offensive coordinator. Now he's the guy calling plays at Michigan. They're going to be a little bit more freewheeling. And if you've watched Shea Patterson play, he is a freewheeling quarterback. And that's a positive for Shea Patterson.
Yeah. Michael Hugan in The Athletic. West Virginia's named a grad transfer. Kendall as their quarterback. Michigan transfer Peters is going to start at quarterback for Illinois. But old Gus Malzahn's going with a true freshman, Bo Nix, as his starting quarterback. That's a, I guess, obviously he won it by his performance on the field. But, boy, as a freshman in a very critical, pivotal year for a head coach, you got to wonder a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it was either a true freshman or a redshirt freshman. And Joey Gatewood, I think, saw action in one game last year in mop-up duty. So basically it was two quarterbacks who haven't done anything at all in college. You know, obviously one's a true freshman. So Malzahn, it is interesting. It's a case of, okay, Bo Nix, your dad started here, so that's some pressure. You're playing as a true freshman at Auburn in the SEC. That's pressure. And then, oh, by the way, your coach is on the hot seat, so, hey, Bo, you may need to be saving your coach's job. So that's even more pressure added on. It's like a, people talk about three-layer cakes. That's about a 30-layer cake for an 18-year-old to handle. So it is going to be interesting. There is no easing into the season. They open with Oregon. They also play Texas A&M in September. They have three games in October. All are on the road. And then, oh, look, here comes November. And they got Georgia and Alabama. So extremely difficult schedule, an opening game against a veteran Oregon team that, by the way, features a top 10 projected pick in the 2020 NFL draft at quarterback in Justin Herbert. So presumably, Oregon's going to have a huge advantage at quarterback. So, yeah, there's a ton of pressure on Nix. I assume Gatewood will be used in some kind of packages because the kid is he's an athletic freak. I know that's used a lot, but he's a 6'5", 245-pounder. He's a Jacksonville-area kid who was not a full-time quarterback in high school because he was simply too valuable at other positions. He played wide receiver. Gotcha. He played tight end. He even played some running back as well as quarterback. So he can do some things. Very physical runner. You hear physical comparisons to Cam Newton. He certainly looks like Cam Newton when he runs the ball. So going to be another interesting situation, you're right, at Auburn, because Malzahn's perennially on the hot seat, and he's relying on a true freshman quarterback to make that seat cooler.
Ooh, boy, boy, boy. We got the AP Top 25 preseason poll out. Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma 4, Ohio State, LSU 6, Michigan 7, Florida 8, Notre Dame 9, Texas 10. Of those 10, who has the best chance of not finishing in the top 10 when it's all said and done?
The teams that are ranked 8, 9, and 10, Florida, Notre Dame, and Texas, I think there's legit questions about each one. We talked about Florida's offensive line. Notre Dame lost a lot of key guys, especially off defense. Is Texas truly back? Ellinger's a good quarterback, but that's another team that I think they're not as bad as they used to be. They're going to be in the hunt for the Big 12 title, but saying they're better than Oklahoma, which some people are, that's a ridiculous statement. A lot of pressure on Ellinger. They have only three starters back on offense. That's obviously not ideal. And Notre Dame, Ian Book needs to have a huge season. So I think he's a pretty good quarterback. He played well last year. They got to the playoff last year and lost, obviously, pretty badly in the playoff. But I still think Brian Kelly knows what he's doing. I think Notre Dame's a 10-win team at best. And that means if they're 9-3 or 8-4, they ain't going to be top 10.
Who's got the better chance to end a losing skid, Michigan over Ohio State or LSU over Alabama this year?
I think Michigan. Just because, again, you got a new coach at Ohio State. You got basically an all-new defensive coaching staff except for Larry Johnson, defensive line coach, including two guys they brought in from Michigan. They've revamped the defense, tweaked the scheme, added a different position. They call it the bullet, which is sort of a hybrid linebacker or safety type, which they did not have before at Ohio State, believe it or not. You know, how good is Justin Fields? Going by what he did in the spring, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, Michigan's got the clear advantage at quarterback. So until we see Justin Fields actually play important downs for a whole game, we're not going to know what Ohio State has. And that's going to be interesting. Their backup quarterback is going to be Gunnar Hoke, a guy who transferred from Kentucky. He could not win the Kentucky starting job, and yet he's one play away from being Ohio State's starting quarterback.
Wow.
And Justin Fields is a phenomenal athlete, so you figure the quarterback run is going to be in Ryan Day's game plan. So, you know, quarterback's going to take more hits, all that kind of stuff. And Michigan, despite how they ended last season, has a solid defense. Shea Patterson, I like Shea. I think he's a good quarterback. They got some interesting receivers, a nice offensive line, but their running back situation is dicey. But I think Ohio State's better. But I'll be honest, if Michigan doesn't get Ohio State this year, I don't know when they're going to get them.
And finally on this, we'll end real quickly. For the national championship game, you taking Clemson, Alabama, or you taking the field?
I'll give you the 128. I'll take Clemson and Alabama. I'll be beyond shocked if both those teams don't make it to the playoff. I mean, you know, you keep you penciling teams in for the playoff. Put Alabama in and pen. They are winning the ACC.
There you go.
Clemson's two touchdowns better than everybody.
He's Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. We'll be talking about some results and previewing the games. I guess they call it week zero this week.
Week zero.
Week one next week. Yeah, crazy. Michael, thank you, my friend.
All right, talk to you next week. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Michael Hugenin of The Athletic, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. Back to wrap things up next.
F-A-B-U-L-O-U-S.
Mella is money.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, a quick wrap-up here. Normally, we give you a little day in history. Today could be a day in history as the Houston Astros, poised to be one of the largest favorites in a Major League Baseball game ever, when they send Justin Verlander to the mound tonight against the Detroit Tigers. The Astros are listed as minus 500 favorites at Caesars Palace and as high as 550 at other sports books. If the price holds, Houston will be the heaviest favorite in the game in at least the past 15 seasons, according to sports betting database BetLabSports.com, and probably likely longer. So the Astros, prohibitive favorites over poor Chuck Woods, miserable Detroit Tigers, who come into tonight's game with a 37 up, 86 down record. There you have it. All right, if today's your birthday, August 21st, happy birthday to you and yours. You share with the likes of Jean Dolores Schmidt. Who is that? Well, you know who that is. That's Sister Jean, the chaplain for the Loyola Ramblers men's basketball team of Loyola University of Chicago. On that great run to the Final Four, Sister Jean hits 100 years old today. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Sister Jean. Happy birthday to you. 100 years old. How about that? That's all the time we have for you today. Come on back tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, I'm Jordy Helper. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.